Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Alex King and Bill G. Today is Tuesday, June the 11th, 2019. It is 8 a.m. in New York, 5 a.m. in Los Angeles, 1 p.m. in London, and 10 p.m. in Sydney. But wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I hope everybody has their boxing trunks on. Today's going to be a little bit of a tussle. We're going to have a little debate going on here. The vaxxers are taking on the anti-vaxxers. Film at 11. No, seriously. When Alex told us a few minutes ago that that was the topic she had in mind for today, Bill's eyes kind of, like, the eyebrows went up. I looked like, oh, well, this is going to be interesting. Okay. But before we begin round one, I just want to get a couple of announcements in. First of all, if you're not yet a subscriber, look what you're in for. I mean, you can't get away from this stuff. It is so much fun, too. So make sure that you are subscribed to our podcast. Easy to do. Go to loatoday.net, and that's where you'll find the instructions on how to do it with your particular device. Then, of course, subscribe and share. Tell other people that you're doing it, that you're listening, that you're liking it, because that's how more and more people get their daily doses of happy. And, you know, feel free also to join us on the live stream, because we're now live streaming on YouTube. And, you know, once you're there, also take advantage and subscribe to us on the YouTube on our YouTube channel and click the little bell. It's just clicking a bell, isn't that it, Alex? It's just that simple.
Well, after you hit the subscribe button, you click the little bell, and that way you're notified every time we go live.
Right. Yeah. So there it is. So subscribe, share, click bell. We're done. Here we are. Okay, in this corner, in red trunks, with a white stripe down the side.
Oh my God.
See, Bill, you gotta be careful what you say on this show. You bring it back to me.
We didn't bring it up last week on the show. We brought it up. That was on the offline. We talked about it.
Well, hey, you know, as long as we're talking, you know, there's no boundaries here. Did you notice that?
Oh, I got it. I got it.
Oh, so.
All right.
Well, I'm going to let Bill come in first and defend how this all came about, because he's probably feeling blindsided right now.
So a little bit.
Well, soften it a little bit. So, you know, go ahead, Bill. Tell us about how your side of it came into it.
Well, I don't know. This is we were just talking about. I don't even know what we were talking about. Actually,
I can't remember. It was random. We were talking about how we were raised and, like, how me and Bill weren't raised on soda and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were talking. I have a 10-year-old son. He's actually almost 11. Mm-hmm. And how it came about is we were talking about the fact that he has never had a soda in his life. Mm-hmm. We were very, very stingy. We held back on candy and whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's got perfect teeth. In fact, whenever we're with family or we're out to dinner or whatever, he never wants dessert. He's very svelte. He's a very skinny kid. In the sense that he most kids his age, I mean, are about 20, 30 pounds heavier than he is.
Yeah.
So it's a huge, huge difference. But he's extremely healthy. He is the healthiest kid I've ever come across in his entire life, in his entire nearly 11 years on this earth. He has only had the flu once. And that is the only thing he's ever had.
Wow.
Now, granted, we do homeschool him. So he doesn't have daily contact with the Petri dish, which we call public school system.
That's exactly what it is.
That is what it is.
But he does hang out with other kids. I've got a head cold right now because of allergies and whatever. He doesn't have bad allergies. And we attribute most of that not only to the diet that we give him, which is mostly vegetarian, but we also we have never vaccinated him. He was born by cesarean in a hospital in New Jersey. Which is a long story in and of itself. We were going to go with a home birth, but 26 hours later, we were doing an emergency C-section. So it was...
Okay. Yeah, home births, like a lot of home births end up in the hospital due to things beyond people's control.
Yeah. So, things did get out of control, which is, why we had a midwife who was very, very well connected. Mm-hmm. But even in the hospital, they wanted to give him his Hep B vaccination, right there. And we were like, absolutely not. He's not going to be coming into contact with somebody with the blood of somebody who has hepatitis. He's right with us the entire time. So it was rather ridiculous to us. And then as we did more research, we decided that my wife's an acupuncturist. So we do herbal remedies. And whenever he has aches and pains, we don't give him ibuprofen or kid, baby Tylenol, whatever. We give him homeopathy. We give him acupuncture. We give him massage. And he's, for all intents and purposes, he's a normal kid. But he's healthier than any other kid I've ever met of his age in this day and age. So, I avoid vaccinations as much as I possibly can. Sometimes they're unavoidable for certain jobs. But I'm a relatively healthy guy too, as long as I can keep my stress levels down.
What, you mean they haven't invented a vaccine for stress?
No, oh, not, apparently not yet.
I would have had a stockpile of that.
I guess they haven't been able to isolate the stress virus. Maybe that's what it is.
Now there's a lot of debate out there about some vaccinations, especially the cocktail that there's a direct link to autism or not linked to autism. We're not really a big subscriber of that. Mm-hmm. But what we do know is that the primary point of health on anybody is their gut flora. If you are damaging your gut flora, you are damaging your overall health. Mm-hmm. And vaccinations, by and large, have been shown to damage gut flora. And also, it has shown that that it generally weakens the immune system, so that somebody is actually more susceptible to the disease they're trying to vaccinate for. And there's plenty of evidence to show that. And again, we can talk about this for a while, but I'll let you talk for a bit.
Okay, so the baton has been thrown to you, Alex.
Okay, so my whole thing is, what are you going to do when your kid, gets to college age and starts, if he decides to go to college and starts intermixing with all these diseases that have now come back due to anti-vaxxing, measles, mumps, polio has making a comeback.
Well, you're making the assumption that the diseases are coming back because of anti-vaxxing. When there's no evidence to support that, because the main cause of disease is lack of sanitation. And history has shown that, as socioeconomic conditions deteriorates, the prevalence of disease goes up because, people aren't eating well. People are destroying their gut bacteria because of their diet. And that's how disease, spreads is because people are in generally poor health. It's not because of any vax or anti-vax movement. In fact, if you look at the evidence, the statistical evidence that, take polio, for example, mm-hmm. that, incidence of polio started to decrease before the polio vaccine came out. And the main reason why the incidence of polio was on a decline, mm-hmm. and statistically, again, I'm not a mathematician. Actually, I had a good friend of mine who is a mathematician, who showed me his analysis of the evidence, and it showed that when during the height of the polio epidemic, the numbers then started to decline. And there was a direct correlation between the increase of sanitation and improved nutrition among the poor, especially, mm-hmm. and that was responsible for the decline in polio incidents. Then the vaccine came along, Mm-hmm. And you would assume mathematically that if you're introducing a vaccine and the vaccine was responsible for the decline of a certain disease, you would see in the downwards trend a spike going down when the vaccine is introduced. And there is no spike. It is just a steady decline the entire way. So the only conclusion you can draw is that it had everything to do with improved nutrition, improved sanitation, and nothing to do with the actual vaccine itself.
Okay, well, I can't vouch for back then because I wasn't there.
Okay.
But what I can...
Neither was I, so, you know, we're in the same boat there.
But what I am seeing now is, you know, kids in daycares who haven't been vaccinated and are coming into contact with kids that have been vaccinated, and there's, you know, disease floating around, and the kids who haven't been vaccinated are spreading the disease because they're catching it because they have no defense against it.
Again, where is your evidence on this? I mean,
where's your evidence?
I'm trying to prove a negative.
That's always hard to do.
My evidence comes from my sister's daycare that her kid goes to.
Okay.
Kid is vaccinated, and there are a lot of non-vaccinated kids there, and they're I'm not saying they're bringing in the disease, but they're definitely catching it and spreading it.
Okay. So, and what is the diet of these kids like?
I don't know their diet. I know what they eat at school because it's a Montessori school, so they definitely, you know, they take care of their kids there. So they're eating very healthy at school. What they're eating at home, I do not know.
Okay.
So I do not know technically what their gut flora is. So
right. So
I don't know anybody who knows how to measure what their gut flora is.
Actually,
what do you do?
Actually,
it's a fluoroscope in there.
Actually, no. It's a stool test. You can get a stool test will measure the level of different healthy bacterias in your gut flora.
Okay.
And
well, I could nitpick that and point out, but doesn't the stool test show you what is no longer in the gut?
I'm sorry.
The stuff that's still in the gut is not in the stool, so it's not going to show up in the stool.
No. If you do a stool sample and you it measures the amount of gut bacteria and the numbers of gut bacteria because it's constantly replenishing itself.
I'm using a funny way of making a point, which is the stool test approach or any of these kinds of testing approaches make their determinations based on what's not in them.
They're measuring the amount of certain bacteria that are in high amount and other ones that are in low amounts. When we're talking specifically about probiotics and we're talking about healthy levels of gut bacteria and whatever, that is measured. You measure that with a stool test. That is the test that you do.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll leave that one alone because it's
okay.
I do want to bring in another point though, and this is going to be my point of view on it because I'm neither pro-vax nor anti-vax. Mm-hmm. I am uninterested vax.
Uninterested vax.
To me, it's not an interesting question. To me, the much more interesting question is, we as a society, as a race, mm-hmm. human beings, have a tendency to, on a wide range of issues, to look at external circumstances and say the external circumstances are what are causing our experiences.
That's correct.
Whether it be diseases, whether it be nutrition, whether it be fill in the blank. I mean, you can just take anything that's external and put it in there.
Right.
What we learn as... I call us deliberate creators in learning, whatever you want to call us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What we're learning is that all this stuff happens in the mind. And if we believe that we're going to get sick when we're exposed to other people who have measles, then we're going to get sick when we get exposed to other people who have measles. If we believe that vaccination is going to protect us, then vaccination is going to protect us. If we believe that being an anti-vaxxer is going to keep us healthy, then being an anti-vaxxer is going to keep us healthy. So my question to both of you guys is, how do we know the external circumstances you guys are talking about are actually causative?
And actually, I completely agree with you there. And that's the approach that we do with medicine all the time when dealing with our clients. It really comes down to how you raise the vibration of what you eat and how you've raised the vibration of your internal circumstances. Because in the end analysis, you are you, you know, and whether or not you are mentally healthy, whether or not you are physically healthy, are all personal choices. And so if you choose, if you believe that you are going to get sick, you're going to get sick. And, you know, I mentioned that I've got a head cold right now because of allergies. Well, that's a belief of mine. I believe that I am allergic to the northern white pine. And so
I'm sympathetic because there's a lot of things that I believe that I realized was just me, but nevertheless, I believe them anyway.
That's right. And to turn off your belief because you find it inconvenient, that's hard to do. And that's actually the crux of a lot of the work that I do through spiritual response therapy. We do through acupuncture, whatever. Most of what we have to do is we have to not only convince the body that no, what you believe is not true, and we need to change your belief into something more positive, or the more healthy, however, getting people to actually change their beliefs, that's nothing, that's something that's completely outside of our control. We have to get them to believe that themselves.
Yeah, you can't control other people and how they think. That's obvious.
People can often
not control how their own thinking is going, let alone somebody else.
And so you take a larger issue like vaccination or anti-vaccination. The CDC is really, really great at making people afraid. I mean, the popular media that's all they do is make people afraid. Mm-hmm. They make people afraid. That's because that's their business model.
Yeah.
Is fear. And so if they make people afraid enough that, oh no, you have to pay money to this pharmaceutical company to make them rich in order to protect yourself against and the idea that you're going to get sick just by being in the presence of some other person who may or may not be sick, because again, that's all in your mind how sick they are. I mean, yes, there's external symptoms and whatever, but we've also shown that the presence of disease, the presence of symptoms, are by and large psychosomatic for many people. The great example of Joel Elston's friends who was diagnosed with liver cancer had all the symptoms of liver cancer until they told him that he didn't have it.
Yeah.
Was a good story.
It was a great story, and it really illustrates beautifully just how powerful the human mind really is.
Right. And so if I go into a situation and I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't had the measles vaccine. And oh my goodness, I'm in a room full of people with measles. I'm going to catch the measles now. Guess what? You're going to catch the measles.
Okay.
Now I go into a room with the people with measles and I'm like, I am not, you know, oh, they all believe that they have the measles, but I don't. And so I leave there and I don't get it.
That's a very common thing too, historically, in the medical community, because often doctors get exposed to all these different diseases that they're treating and they don't get the diseases.
Right.
Why? Because they believe they're not going to get the diseases. I mean, it's just that.
Right.
Now, have they ever documented that through a scientific study? I don't think so. Mm. I'd like to see them do that sometime, but.
I mean, they do require in hospitals, they do require in hospitals that all doctors, all nurses get the flu vaccine. Mm-hmm. But the flu vaccine statistically doesn't work. That when people get the flu vaccine, first of all, about 10-20% of them get the flu immediately.
Well, that's because the flu vaccine is made from the
from
flu.
Live virus. It's well, made from live virus.
Yeah,
right. Vaccines are made from the thing.
Right.
And then if there's a serious outbreak, people get sick. Even after they get the vaccine. Now, I got the flu this year. Okay, I got the flu this year. I get the flu maybe once every other year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, I had very high stress levels at the time I got the flu because I'd recently lost my job. I was trying to figure out what the heck my life was going to be next. So I got the flu. My immune system was compromised due to my stress levels.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So I got the flu.
An interesting thing too, because medical science has repeatedly told us they don't know how to measure stress. And so they can't test to find out what the influence of stress is on the human body. They believe that it's there. They'll keep telling you it's always one of the causes of every disease you can imagine, but they can't tell you what role it plays, which I find to be fascinating. So.
And I remember very clearly when I was sick, home in bed, and I was like, all right, I'm going to ride this through. I got the flu right now. My wife comes in the room. She says, "You have the flu. I'm going to get the flu now, too. Thank you very much."
You guys have some very strange conversations, Bill. That's all I got to say.
And lo and behold, she got the flu.
So, Alex, I got to ask you then. So to what degree do you think the whole exposure to other diseases thing is actually what's doing it? And to what degree do you think it's the mindsets of the people who are involved that's doing it?
I think it's a combination of both, actually.
Okay.
Because if it's like Bill said, if you walk into a room and you feel like you're surrounded by measles, then your mindset's going to go, "Oh, well, measles now." But at the same time, there are scientific tests. Oops, excuse me. There are scientific tests that have shown that actually happens. So who's to say if it's in your mind or if it's physically, you know?
Well, let me put it this way. You've got, say you walk into a room with people full of measles,
mm-hmm.
and you got the vaccine, and now you believe you're not going to get it because you got the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it has nothing to do with the fact there's a vaccine in your system. Mm-hmm. It has everything to do is because you believe that the vaccine has done something here,
mm-hmm.
then okay, I'm not going to get the disease. You know, it's the placebo effect. And, you know, mm-hmm. that's another topic we've talked about in other shows, is how the placebo effect has a serious impact on whether or not you get sick about something.
Okay.
Well, go ahead, Alex.
I was going to say, do you believe in insurance?
Insurance? Do I believe in insurance?
Yes.
Good question.
Actually, you mean like health insurance?
Health insurance, car insurance, house insurance, all insurance.
Well, considering that I have that.
Yes. And why do you have
it? This is some level of belief.
First of all, I don't have health insurance right now because, mm-hmm. you know, since I lost my job, I don't have health insurance, at least not for now. I'll qualify for Medicaid in probably another year.
Uh-huh.
But, and that all depends on how the business goes. If the business does well, then I won't get Medicaid. I won't qualify. We do have a life insurance policy,
mm-hmm.
And that's mostly just to cover accidents. We're not doing that for disease or anything like that.
Well, that wasn't my point. My point is, you believe in insurance. You're paying for insurance in case something happens.
In case something happens, yes.
Okay, that's what a vaccine is. You're paying for the vaccination in case you run into that germ.
But now you're assuming that the vaccine itself is safe. And that's my other issue when it comes to vaccines. Because vaccines...
Actually, I'm not sure I could buy into that argument, Joe. Or Joe, yeah. Where did Joe come from? Bill. Who's Joe? I have no idea.
I don't know.
But Bill, I'm not sure I could buy into that argument, because if I buy into that argument, then I also have to buy into the idea that if I deal with an insurance company who I feel like is cheating me,
mm-hmm.
the full value, then I am somehow bringing the incident upon myself.
Well, I also, I've got very mixed feelings when it comes to insurance companies.
You and me both, especially when I'm writing the check, let me tell you.
Right, right. Well, I worked for an insurance company for 10 years.
I didn't work that long, but I worked for one for about 3 years, so I understand.
Yeah. So I understand the model, and I understand how the model works.
Mm-hmm.
And insurance companies are generally not in the business to pay claims. They're
right.
in the business. They're, well, it isn't. They lose money when they pay claims.
That's right.
They make their profits by selling peace of mind. That's their business model, which is why health insurance is more sick insurance, and why they don't. There's a whole other issue there. Yeah. When it comes to how we deal with insurance companies, like for acupuncture, it's very difficult working with insurance companies with acupuncture because mm-hmm. the only thing they'll pay for is pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And acupuncture covers a lot more than just pain.
Mm-hmm.
The work that I do with the with SRT, absolutely not covered. And I'm glad they don't, because if they covered it, then they would require me to have more credentials that I care not to have. They would require me to, because as soon as insurance companies get involved in healthcare, then they start calling the shots about mm-hmm. what is healthcare and what is not healthcare. So when somebody, for example, if somebody comes to my wife at the clinic and has insurance that covers acupuncture, and they have diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so now acupuncture is very good for helping to treat diabetes. Or they have asthma. And asthma mm-hmm. is also very treatable. I mean, she has a client right now who's a 5-year-old kid with asthma.
Mm-hmm.
And within 2 treatments, this kid's asthma was pretty much gone.
Mm-hmm.
So it does great, great work with that. The insurance companies generally won't cover that.
Mm.
Because they feel that no, you've got to take this. We've got a drug for that. We have a treatment for that. That is what they call evidence based. They got an evidence based, and it doesn't matter how many studies in the acupuncture field or the Eastern medicine field has been done. If the insurance, if the pharmaceutical companies and the doctors associations and that lobby says no, we can make more money doing this route.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make sure that insurance covers that and doesn't cover something else. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a lot of cases, it's like, okay, you're coming to me because you've got diabetes. Where's your pain? Where does it hurt? Tell me mm-hmm. where it hurts. And so then once we know where it hurts, then that's what goes on the insurance form. We don't write down that they've got diabetes. So they're coming to us for diabetes. We write down that they've got pain.
Mm-hmm.
You're making an interesting point here, and you also made one earlier where you said, I don't remember exactly.
Now fortunately, most diseases come with pain. Diabetes, there is pain, and people who have diabetes are in pain.
Yes.
people who have asthma have pain.
Yes.
So it's not like we're lying to the insurance companies. I'm not advocating that at all.
But the point you made earlier was an interesting point, and I want to bring that one in.
Okay.
The point is, and you kind of said it parenthetically, you said mm-hmm. they're not in the health industry, they're in the sickness industry.
That's mm-hmm. right.
Which is true.
That is true.
And I think it has a really large bearing on what we're talking about here, because, like you said, health insurance companies lose money whenever they have to pay out on a claim.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they will pay out on a claim when there's pain.
Right.
But they claim to be in the health industry.
That is true.
And as you point out, they really are in the sickness industry. Mm-hmm. So here's an interesting thing. You say that, and I'm not picking on you. I'm using your words. I'm kind of picking on your words because they illustrate something. Mm-hmm. They say that they lose money whenever they pay on a claim, but they're only interested in pain so they can pay out money.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with this business model?
Well,
there's a significant issue here. I mean, like you say, they're in the business of making money. So what do? They make their business model all about paying out on the thing that's going to lose money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they do then is they increase the premiums.
Oh, yeah.
And which then inflates the cost of healthcare. And so the pharmaceutical companies make money, the insurance companies make money, the hospitals make money, and the only people who really lose money are the people who actually need the care.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it raises the question in my mind, what would it take for, fill in the blank, insurance, hospital, doctor, healthcare, whatever you want to call it, what would it take for people to make money as a true healthcare system? In other words, mm-hmm. not where they're paying based on pain, what would they pay based on?
Now you're getting into a political discussion.
You weren't in one before?
I thought that's what the anti-vax thing was, a political discussion.
It is a political discussion, which is why
I wouldn't say it was a political discussion. I feel like it's a personal preference discussion.
Well, it becomes political when you're talking about Medicare for all. And again, the reason why Medicare for all is probably a better option is because you're taking the profit motive out of it. Mm-hmm. Make all hospitals nonprofit, make all pharmaceutical companies nonprofit. So mm-hmm. that way they're not so interested in satisfying the shareholders. They're more interested in actually providing the service for the people. And that is the motivation.
That's a nice motivation, yeah. But it still avoids the core question. The core question is, what is it that you price in order to make money in an industry that is oriented around health rather than around pain?
You mean oriented around sick rather than pain?
No, I mean it's oriented around health because right now the current system is oriented like around pain or sick or however you want to.
Right, yes.
But I'm saying if we want to turn that around and turn that into a system that's based on true health, that's actually aimed at being profitable by providing health, mm-hmm. how do you price that? How do you assign pricing to that? Because to me that's a key question.
It is a key question. It's actually one that Vermont has been tackling for a while because they're trying to change to what they call an all care model. And mm-hmm. the all care model focuses on health outcomes rather than billable services for healthcare. So, say for instance, you go to your doctor and you have a condition that needs addressing. You know, you're overweight. So you go to the doctor and the doctor says you're overweight. So now they could prescribe you. Liposuction, they can do, you know, they can do all sorts of invasive types of surgeries and whatever to which are covered under insurance, which would give the healthcare provider a great deal of money because, you know, a liposuction, my goodness, we're talking thousands and thousands of dollars. We've been talking surgery here.
Mm-hmm.
And the patient is now going to have post-operative pain and whatever. So they, you know, we've got this cash cow going. But if you change the model to say, no, we are going to measure, we are going to pay you based on whether or not this person loses weight and is healthier and their cholesterol levels are down to a healthy level and that they're getting proper exercise and that their stress levels are reduced. Then
all kinds of warning flags
right
in my face when I hear that. All kinds of warning flags.
Yeah, but again, you're measuring the healthcare industry and the insurance companies get compensated based off of the health outcome rather than the health the a la carte health treatment. And again, it's one that Vermont has been tackling because the devil is in the details when it comes to something like that.
No kidding.
Like you said, you know, all those warning flags come out. You know, how do you bill this? How do you bill that?
Well, not just how do you bill that. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, you identify things like low cholesterol or, you know, high cholesterol or whatever.
Right.
But even that is based on certain assumptions.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Assumptions being that it's the cholesterol that are causing certain conditions.
Right.
And even that's open to debate. There's a whole lot of question about that within the medical community itself, let alone outside the medical community, which goes haywire about anything that comes out like that. You know, so again, I raised the point, how do you price this? And the reason I think that's such an important point is until we recognize the fact that there really is no better way to price it than there is for a medical doctor to decide how to measure stress, we aren't going to be able to shift the whole conversation. Right now, the conversation is all going to be about, like in the way we started here, vax or anti-vax, which one's going to be more conducive to society for making society a healthier society? That's what you're going to be tied into. Until we switch our mentality over to what is health, we can't get out of that struggle. It's a continuing cycle. Well, we could actually. We can all decide at any given time.
Any given time.
You know what? I'm not going to buy into that argument. I'm just going to say, I'm going to focus on what I want instead. We can all do that. And maybe that's actually part of the solution from a societal point of view. Do you think so?
It is. It is because if we change our attitude about health, about what is health, and we reduce our stress and say, okay, I'm not going to buy into this fear-mongering argument that I need to pump my body full of chemicals in order to be healthy, that I can simply eat well, I can have a mostly vegetarian diet, I can exercise regularly, I can meditate, and I can do all of these things that can help bring my body into a state of homeostasis. And when your body is in a state of homeostasis, you cannot get sick. You cannot get sick.
Well, on the other hand, we could also say, well, if I take my mind out of the idea that I have to be vegetarian and I have to have this
certain homeostasis,
you know, maybe it isn't even about the external conditions at all.
Not about the external conditions. It is about the internal.
Right.
It is always about the internal, because like we've said before, all of this world that's around us, it's just an illusion.
Yeah.
It is there for our convenience to learn the lessons we need to basically come to the conclusion that it doesn't really exist, that who we are as individual souls, we are beautiful things.
We certainly are. Yeah.
And because we are beautiful and we are perfect in our own way, then we quickly understand that all disease is simply a state of mind. That we have, that we buy into this external argument. We buy into that we are, that we're, that whatever happens on the outside is going to affect us on the inside, when it really, it's the other way around. Whatever is in our inside is what's affecting us on the outside. And that is it, because, and that's all about being the deliberate creator, that we create our reality, that how we feel on the inside is going to affect what is on the outside. And if you believe that the world is coming after you, if you believe that people are trying to take away your wealth or take away your money, if you believe that you're going to be sick by walking into a room full of sick people, that is exactly what's going to happen, because it's your internal belief which is setting up the circumstances to create the reality that you see.
So, Alex, a couple minutes ago, you took the position that there was a balance, that was a combination of what we think internally and feel internally and what the external circumstances are that influence the vax debate, because that's what we were originally talking about, was vaccination. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm probably safe in saying that it also, in your view, it also applies to the wider range of healthcare. Am I misrepresenting that?
That's difficult for me to say. I'm gonna vouch for Massachusetts for a second.
Okay.
Because a lot of things with insurance have changed. Mm-hmm. So they are focusing more on healthcare as opposed to, you know, oh, take this medication to fix this problem. Mm-hmm. They're giving, you know, premium discounts on, have you joined a gym to mm-hmm. fix this problem? Right. Where do you shop? What are you eating? What's in your diet? What does your doctor say about, you know, how are your blood tests coming out? You know, you're getting discounts on your insurance based on those facts.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can only, like I said, I'm only in one state, so I can only vouch for us.
Well, I don't know about you. I ship between states every single day. Oh, that's not what you meant, is it? Oh, I'm sorry.
Not mental state.
Oh. I'm sorry. I should have qualified that.
But, you know, there's also, speaking of mental states, there's also backup plans for that, too. So it's like, if we're going to put you on this medication, we want to make sure you're not just going to abuse the system, say you have this issue, and go sell it on the street corner. We want to make sure you're taking this medication. So therefore, in order to take this medication, you have to have a therapist every week. And we have to follow up and follow through. You know, there's backup plans in states, you know, for your mental state and for your medical states, you know? So I don't know. It's all a mess, to be all the way honest.
I think it's a fair characterization. I like that characterization.
It is a mess. And that's why I just take my little corner of earth and I just live on it, because I don't want to be out there. This is why I avoid stuff like this.
Wait a minute, you brought up the topic. Hold on
right,
a second.
Because I've never met, I see all the kerfuffle on Facebook.
I see.
Stuff, right?
Yeah.
But I've never talked about it personally with an actual anti-vaxxer. That's why I wanted to discuss it.
Oh, well, that makes sense. That's educational.
Now I'm uncomfortable with the term anti-vaxxer.
I knew you would be. I figured you would be.
I am because I'm. It's like when you're even when you talk of like the pro-life, pro-choice, whatever. Those are labels.
Yes, they are labels.
They're labels, and
what would you like to be called besides Bill?
William.
I am
William.
Pro-healthcare.
Pro-healthcare.
Pro health.
Okay.
Or pro-health.
Pro-health, I like, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know. I mean, I see your point. I do.
I am pro-health in the sense that what is, what you're looking for at all times is the ability to achieve a state of homeostasis within your body.
Okay.
And if you are not achieving homeostasis because, number one, your stress levels are too high, number two, you're eating like crap, and you believe that you're eating like crap, and number three, you are not getting adequate exercise, and the thing is, we all know basically what we need to do in order to stay healthy because we know.
I raised the question. I'm not so sure.
most people know that exercise is good for you. Most people know that having McDonald's every night for dinner is not good for you.
That's all what you believe, though.
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
If I could have like 10 McDoubles a day and say I'm healthy and I'm fine, then according to you, that's true. So, and if I say I don't want to go to the gym and I'm absolutely healthy, according to you, that's true.
If you can get past that belief, so that you can actually embrace that, then absolutely that's true.
Yeah. Okay.
So that I think becomes the starting point, the real starting point for what the conversation, in my opinion, should be, which is, what do we believe?
Right.
What do I believe about my health or lack thereof? Do I believe that if I go eat a gallon of ice cream, that's likely to put on 10 pounds? Do I believe that if I go eat a gallon of ice cream, that it's going to lose 10 pounds? Do I believe?
I believe neither. I believe you're getting your daily dose of dairy.
I love it.
And that's assuming that you think the dairy is good for you. I'm lactose intolerant. That's not
good. I am too. But that's only because we believe we're lactose intolerant.
I want to speak in favor of lactose. I love lactose. It's delicious.
It was delicious, but you know, the rest of me doesn't agree with that.
So there, you just underlined it beautifully there, Alex. I love the way you said that. The rest of you disagrees with you.
Yeah.
Ultimately, all of this and our internal connection, so that's all of us, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you just described very beautifully how your mind says one thing and your body says another thing.
Facts.
We often describe that as a disconnect. It isn't really a disconnect. It's a disagreement going on.
Yep.
Like there's a little argument going on inside of our
belly. Oh, yeah. I have food arguments all the time.
Yeah.
My taste buds say one thing, but my stomach says, oh, no.
Isn't it interesting how we always lose those arguments, no matter which side we're on?
Yep.
I mean, we're consistent about that.
Yes.
You know, we differ on, you know, individual to individual. One person's going to have an argument about this, another person's going to have an argument about that within themselves. But we always lose the arguments.
Yeah.
And so if we're always losing the arguments, it makes me wonder, well, geez, maybe we shouldn't be arguing.
Right. That's why I don't argue with milk anymore. I just let it go. Some things you got to pick your battles, man.
But there is a way, though, for you to get over your lactose intolerance, to, you know, energetically to get over it, that you don't have the reaction with that. But then you have to ask yourself the question, why would I want to? There's a wonderful story that Yogananda once told, and it was the story of a yogi who spent years and years and years meditating. And his sole purpose was to create for himself a loaf of bread or a piece of fruit out of nothing. He to just take the energy of the universe and create a piece of food in front of him. And he spent decades and decades and decades just meditating 10, 20 hours a day, just meditating to get himself to understand the fabric of the universe well enough to create this piece of food in front of him. Mm. And then Yogananda comes to him and he sees this miracle. He sees him create food out of nothing. And, you know, it takes him like an hour to create this piece of fruit. And he says, ha, here's my piece of fruit. And when he opens his eyes, he sees Yogananda chewing on a piece of fruit. He's like, yeah, I just went down to the market.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the point of the story is that, yes, we can change the fabric of the universe and through our meditation and whatever to achieve a certain thing. But then you have to ask yourself, well, where am I devoting my energies? Where am I devoting my attentions? Is it necessary?
I'm not so sure if it's about necessary. I think your first question was the better question. Where do I want to devote my energies? What's my preference? Which way do I prefer to go? Because I may prefer to practice trying to manifest that piece of fruit out of nothing. Because that's so cool to be able to do that. Not because I want to eat it, just because to see if I could do it. On the other hand, if I'm really hungry, I may just go down to the market to get the piece of fruit because it's a lot easier.
Who's to say you didn't manifest the market being down there?
You could
go to it and there was your piece of fruit.
No kidding.
That brings me back to healthcare and saying, you know, okay, so you're sick or what have you. Who's to say you're not manifesting the perfect doctor to help you or the perfect vaccine to get rid of that germ or whatever.
That's right.
Absolutely true. Yeah, I agree with that. That's exactly what happens. Now, there is another element to this that we haven't discussed. And I was trying to debate with myself, do I really want to bring this one in? But I said, oh, well, what the heck, go for it. There is the belief that you can make me sick. I can make you sick.
No. No.
No, no, what?
I mean,
what does that mean, no? There's a lot of possible meanings for no there.
I mean, you and me, like right now, like, no, I can't make you sick.
Well, I mean, if we're in the same room, for instance. Or,
we're in the same room.
Or we share the same sandwich or something. I don't know.
Germs do travel. However, if I'm trying to, like manifest you sick, that won't work. It just won't work.
It doesn't work because what?
Because you can't control other people.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get sick then?
Well, germs are a whole, that's part of the body that don't listen to us. You know what I mean? Like, you can't argue with germs.
Sure you can.
Sure you can.
Well, I feel germs are always out there. Bacteria is always out there. Atoms are out there. Like that's just,
it's not
that's
just part the of the world. Thing is, and that's part of the flaw in your thinking here is that the germs are not out there. They're in you. Every disease, every bacteria, every disease bacteria or virus is already inside of you. It already exists within your gut flora.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not you give that disease, that virus or whatever you give it power,
mm-hmm.
is up to you. And when you give it power, then you get sick.
Well, I'm not so sure it's a flaw in our argument, because I think what she's arguing is that germs are everywhere. And I think that's true. They're just inside of you. They're also
right.
They're in many, many different places.
Mm-hmm. But exposure to certain diseases is not necessarily the point. I mean, yes, you can get, if you have exposure to something, you can give whatever's already inside you a little bit of strength, but most of the time, 99% of the time, you get sick because there is that you've given the upper hand to that particular disease in you, which is why another reason why antibiotics are so bad for you for the most part.
Well, wait. No, I only take
antibiotics when I absolutely, absolutely have to.
I got to stop you there for a second, because there's a problem that I have with what you're saying. Once again, I think this is an example of us externalizing our
immune
systems.
Right.
You know, it isn't about the germs, I don't think. I mean, unless we decide that it is. It's our decision that makes it about the germs, not the germs themselves. There's nothing inherent in a germ that makes people sick, I don't believe. I think it's our belief that does it.
Yes.
Our belief that germs, our belief that there is some external cause. There's some reason that I got sick that has nothing to do with my thought process. It wasn't me. I was the innocent victim here.
Right.
It made me, this thing out there made me sick. And I think that's the thing that actually gets in our way more than anything else, because we're constantly finding ways of externalizing. We're constantly finding ways of saying, it's the germs, it's the diet, it's the lack of diet, it's the lack of germs, it's the vaccines, it's the lack of vaccines, it's the health insurance, it's the lack of health insurance. It's like this endless panoply of items that are all outside of us that say, these are the reasons why we're not healthy. Bullshit. Right.
And what do all those items have in common?
They're outside.
and they're all fear-based.
And they're all fear-based, that's right.
And they're all fear-based. It's all, I'm afraid I'm going to get sick, I'm afraid of whatever. Right.
Speaking of fear-based, that brings me back to my original point.
We keep coming back there, it's cool.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to say point because it wasn't a point that I wanted to bring up, but it does bother me. And Bill had brought this up, that he has no... personal opinions on whether vaccinations cause autism. That is something that is fear-based, and I totally disagree with, because it logically doesn't make any sense, because there are kids that have been vaccinated and not vaccinated and both have autism. So there's no studies behind it. There's no paperwork behind it. And it's a neurological disease. So what does that have to do with germs? Like, I don't get that part. So
first of all, we were calling autism a disease. I don't believe it's a disease.
It's not. It's a disorder. It's not a disease.
No, it's not even a disorder. I believe.
Okay.
I believe autism is a form of, our essential, it's evolution in process. For ascension happening. Mm-hmm. People who have autism are greater receptors to, they see non-physical world, or they experience the non-physical world in a much more visceral way than people who are not autistic. And we automatically put, because we fear these people, because they're different, we automatically label them as being diseased or with disordered, and we medicate them to the point where they are no longer able to use their gifts effectively.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion, only mm-hmm. because I've been working with an autistic client for, 7 months now.
Mm-hmm.
And he is one of the most brilliant people that you'll ever meet. But, you know, part of the issue, though, is that his parents and his family and they keep trying to make him into a normal person, and that has caused a great deal of emotional distress for him.
Mm-hmm.
And because he doesn't have the ability to contain his emotions as well as other people can, because
mm-hmm.
he's different,
mm-hmm.
he has abilities which are different than you and me. Because, you know, for him, when people are coming at him with strong emotions, he feels it 10 times than what quote unquote normal people would have.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's extremely sensitive. And yes, so his emotional reactions are going to be stronger than others.
Agreed.
But again, it's part of an evolutionary process. It's not a part of it. These people are breaking out and making and being more sensitive to the non-physical world, and so the rest of us say, oh no, that's abnormal, we got to throw some medication at it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We got to make them feel as if they're broken, when in fact it's part of the evolutionary process, which is again why I see very little connection between the vaccination argument and autism. Because my experience with it is that it's an evolutionary process, and we just gave it a convenient label because, again, it's all about fear. It's all about mm-hmm. making people afraid. The reason why we didn't vaccinate my son isn't because we were afraid he was going to get autism. Mm-hmm. We decided not to vaccinate him because we wanted to take a different approach. We don't want him to be afraid. And the thing is, he is not afraid. If I had him right here with me right now and you asked him, are you afraid of getting any measles, rubella, whooping cough, whatever? If you asked him if he was afraid, not a bit. Not mm-hmm. one little bit. He approaches life absolutely fearless.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. And that's really reassuring too, because it's one more example of a child who's being raised outside of the realm of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. However you want to frame it, that's really the beauty of it. When we grow up believing in ourselves and connected, mm-hmm. maintaining our connection that we all have to that source and
right.
feeling good about it and feeling good about what's going on. And you know, every time that we make a choice, we're choosing in favor of what we want, not against what we want, or at least that's most right. of the time. My God, what a great way to live. So, I mean, it's wonderful to see kids growing up that way today. And
yeah.
I can only imagine that it's going to lead to some results that we can't even begin to imagine yet. I mean, just stuff's going to start showing up and we're going to say, where did that come from?
It absolutely blows our mind because, you know, the other night we were at a panel discussion of kids who were homeschooled all the way through high school.
Mm.
And because people submitted questions ahead of time because, you know, these are mostly parents who are homeschooling their kids.
Right.
And Wyatt's almost 11 years old. He's halfway through sixth grade. He's going to be hitting seventh grade soon. And so we're thinking, oh, my gosh, he's not going to, you know, be in public high school. He may not go to public high school. He's not going to experience prom. He's not going mm-hmm. to experience these things that are part of our everyday, you know, most of us who went through the public school systems or even the private school systems, we have certain experiences, shared mm-hmm. experiences that, and we're like, well, he's not going to have that. Is he going to be okay? And so the panel consisted of four recent high school graduates or recent college graduates mm-hmm. who went through homeschool for all the way from kindergarten through high school. And man, was that a eye-opening experience to talk to these kids, how they had such control over their lives and how well-adjusted they are. And one of the questions was, did you guys go to prom? And the answer across the board was, why would we want to do that?
Yes, right.
That what I would
traumatized
on
my own prom. That, I understand that answer completely.
Right. Why would I put myself through that? And these kids, you know, they sometimes had to take classes over at the public high school, like driver's ed and that kind of thing, and they hated it because they could not. They had such a hard time relating to kids their own age, and they couldn't understand why they were disrespectful to the teachers. Blah 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 blah. You know, all the things that we remember from our childhoods in high
yeah.
school. How cruel kids were to each other and yes. how teachers were treated terrible by the, I was a public school teacher myself. I know how bad those kids treated. So, and then you talk to these kids and they're like, oh yeah, you know, and you know, we did school 2, 3, 4 hours a day at the most. And then we got, you know, they got to do apprenticeships. They got to hang out with adults. They got to take college courses and, these were the most well-adjusted people you will ever meet in your life. And it was all about, and again, when we left there, we were like, that's what we want. That mm-hmm. is, and we, you know, you go in there with the fear saying, oh, you know, we want him to go to public high school because we're afraid that he won't have the same experiences that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And then we leave there saying, wow, those shared experiences really sucked.
So I got to ask you, Alex, how did we do with the topic? I mean, this is a topic you brought up, and it creates some really interesting and sometimes contentious discussion. But how did we do?
I think we did all right. I think we did all right. No one pulled any hairs out. No one has additional gray hairs, I don't think. I have to check.
I don't know how I would measure that because most of mine are gray now. So, I mean, you know, do I look
most
brown?
Most?
Look in the back. Most. Look in the back. You can't see it. It ain't there.
I
I use two mirrors. Anyway, before we go, Alex, I want to give you a chance because sadly you gave up your other podcast, spoiler alert, but I figure we ought to get, is there any really quick off the top of your head spoiler alert things that we should be telling our audience about for those who missed the podcast?
Claws, which is a very interesting show that just started its third season Sunday. So cliffhangers already. It was pretty amazing. Okay. And Veronica Mars was a very good show that came out in the early 2000s, and they're doing a revival. So that's going to be interesting. But it actually takes place after the movie they did in 2014. So if you haven't seen the movie, which wasn't in theaters, so that's possible. If you haven't seen the movie, you might want to, catch up on that because it picks up right after where that left off.
Okay, yeah, you need the background then. So
yeah.
Okay, so good. Thank you for the update. And Bill, because you're an SRT consultant, we got to give you the chance to let people know how to find Bill, the SRT consultant. How do they do that?
Well, you can find me on my website. It's ninage.com. That's ninage.com. I could also be found on Facebook. I write a weekly blog. And, of course, you can find me here on LOA Today on Tuesday mornings.
Which we love so much. So thank you guys very much. Thank you to our live stream listeners and to our podcast listeners as well. We will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everyone.